back on another episode of Brick House. Today, breaking down the number 8 team in our NBA preview for the 2015-16 season. I'm Bob Johnson.
Hey, I'm Matt Baker. And Bob, I can't believe we're at 8. When we started...
We've come so far.
I know. When we started at number 30, I remember the day we talked about doing every team, like thinking to myself, that is going to be a long process.
We've been cranking them out, though. The Elite Eight, as they would say in amateur hoops. But we're in the big leagues. And Chicago Bulls, not only do we have them at number 8 overall in the league, I'm predicting they're number 2 in the Eastern Conference.
Wow.
Which means we have a lot of Western Conference teams in our top 7.
Yeah, that's crazy. I didn't even put that together in my head until you just said it. So we better relish this Eastern Conference team because we're not getting much more.
But before we get into all that, let's make some fun of it and talk about how the Bulls are like the movie Inception.
Ooh.
It's a good movie. I figured the top 8, we got to have some good comparisons. Okay, so hear me out on this one, Matt. So you know the Cillian Murphy character, he's the dude, the son of the billionaire guy who actually gets incepted by DiCaprio.
He's the main incepted one.
Right. Also plays the Scarecrow in the other in the Batman Nolan movies. Okay, so he's the son of this billionaire corporate dude, right? And he's basically living in his father's shadow, as what we learn as the movie progresses. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to convince him that his father wanted him to be his own man, wanted him to, you know, forge his own path. And it's all a trick to get him to dissolve the corporation.
Right.
But I kind of think of the character as the Chicago Bulls currently. 17 years ago, they only had the greatest player of all time, leading them to 6 championships in 8 years. They have, you know, quite a lot to live up to in the city of Chicago wearing those jerseys. And I feel like, to some extent, that's kind of hanging over their heads. So my advice...
Literally, because there's banners in the rafters hanging over their heads.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. So to fix this, I would recommend that if you're going to incept some dudes mm-hmm. on the Bulls, you start with Derrick Rose. And you incept Derrick Rose and you, like, whisper in his ear shoot a bunch of machine guns or however that movie's supposed to work. You incept Derrick Rose and convince him that he's strong enough to get through an NBA season and postseason, for starters. And while you're inside his mind, you might as well tell him, like, hey, you know, don't answer questions in obviously stupid ways that you should ever mention. Just put that in there. Drop that little egg while you're inside. I think someone incepted Pau Gasol last year. It certainly looked like it, the way he played. Or maybe Kobe had incepted him the past few years, just like convinced him, just give me the ball. You get the ball, just throw it to me, man.
Yeah.
And had this like control over him. I don't think Fred Hoiberg needs to be incepted because I think if he goes over 1 minute over any of the player minute limitations that Paxson and Foreman have set for him, he'll be canned immediately. And so his inception does not need to be subtle. He's
already
down,
incepted.
I'm sure. But overall, if you wanted to incept the Bulls, let's say the Bulls as a whole are Cillian Murphy, you just got to convince them that they mentally can beat the Cleveland Cavaliers. You know, who is it? Sun Tzu or one of those, the Machiavelli or something says that, you know, any fight is already over before it's begun. And that's sort of how I view the Cavs versus the Bulls, or LeBron versus the Bulls, I guess. But let's move on to our next segment.
Previously on the Chicago Bulls.
The past 7 years, this comes as kind of a shocker to me. The Bulls have only made the conference finals once. They've made the playoffs 7 straight years, but only conference finals once. In 2011, they lost to the Heat 4 games to 1.
That was the year Rose won MVP, right?
Right. I mean, it makes sense, because Rose has been out pretty much all the time since then.
Yep.
But you would think that the Bulls just seem like a team that would have had these deep playoff runs. We all know that there's a bunch of talent on the team. But like you said, they can't stay healthy. That's pretty much the previously on. They spent the past 5 years with Tom Thibodeau. It was kind of them getting a little sick of him, sort of. But also, I think he was just a casualty of injuries.
Yeah.
I think everyone will agree that Thibodeau is a good coach.
He's a good coach, yeah, but he, for some reason, just could not agree to limit players' minutes. But because the Bulls previously on has pretty much been a rerun every year around the playoffs, I got a couple of little extras I picked up off the internet for NBA League Pass watchers or just Bulls fans in general. You know, there's some teams that I would recommend watching. I'd recommend watching the Bulls, not only because they have good players and a new coach that's going to be interesting, but they have one of the best home announcers of anybody in the NBA that I've listened to. His Stacey King.
Yes.
He's a former Bull.
Great. Former Bulls great.
Yeah, he was on the teams with Jordan and Pippen.
Sorry, I said former Bulls great. I meant former Bull.
Adequate Bull.
Yeah. Former guy who played on the Bulls.
What he might have lacked in basketball outstandingness, he makes up for in quotes for the Bulls. Here's a few quotes I pulled down from Stacey King's for people watching on League Pass this year. There was a dunk on Big Baby Davis a couple years ago,
mm-hmm.
and Stacey King's quote was, "Glenn Big Baby Davis, he was late getting over there, but he was early enough for the poster." Another one when Brian Scalabrine was on the team and he made some move, like a crossover move, reverse layup. He says, "White Mamba, don't do them like that. Don't show them the versatility." he gave Luol Deng the nickname Luol Dangerous or Luol Dangerous Deng.
Wow.
Pretty good. He was marveling at Derrick Rose a couple years ago. He was on a fast break against former Bull Elton Brand. And so Brand's trying to catch him on the fast break. And King says, "There's no way in the world Elton Brand was going to be able to run with him. He's like a Ferrari with a bunch of Hyundais out there." Which actually is kind of like almost a ripoff of a Nas line.
Yeah.
You're trying to get from a Benz to a Benz from a Hyundai.
Oh, yeah.
But that's
yeah.
okay.
Hey, it's okay. He thought of it in the moment.
It's cool. I'm totally butchering this, by the way. If you listen to the Bulls, his delivery
is
it's
way all
funnier.
About the delivery.
One more thing, a fact that I saw that I found was interesting in relation to the previously on was Tom Thibodeau, his entire career as a head coach is just with the Bulls.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it was 4 or 5 seasons, including that lockout.
5 seasons. Yeah.
Okay. So 5 seasons, including that lockout shortened season. In the regular season, his record is 255-139, which would make him 6th best all time.
Wow.
Regular season.
Yeah.
However, the postseason record in that same time, 23-28. I think without Leonardo DiCaprio just really staring at these guys in a bar inside their mind.
Yeah.
They're going to have to, you know, find something else to get over that hump. But enough about that. Who's that owner? We'll talk more about who's on the team after we break down the owner of this franchise. A one Jerry M. Reinsdorf.
He's been around forever.
You know, he's been around forever, and he's one of those owners, because he's been around for so long, that he actually has some sort of reputation. And, you know, I never knew much about him until this segment. I started researching this segment, other than around the time the Bulls broke up in 98, that, you know, one of the reasons for that has always been said is because he was such a cheapskate.
Right.
Didn't want to pay Scottie Pippen, and despite having one of the greatest teams of all time, let them break up. And I thought it was interesting when I looked up his background, you know, where this comes from. Other stuff that he's famous for is not only penny pinching with his own team, but also being one of the most influential owners in the NBA and MLB, especially MLB.
Right.
With negotiating for the way the collective bargaining agreement between the players and owners.
Revenue sharing.
Exactly. So his background is with the IRS.
Ah.
He was a tax attorney for the IRS. And so I found it, you know, no surprise at all that he's the guy initiating those, you know, different ways, different tricks of showing ways that the owners are losing money and thus need more money. You know, there's lots of different ways to manipulate the figures, and no one would know better than a former tax attorney for the IRS.
He bought the White Sox and the Bulls, 2 separate transactions, a few years apart, but total, he bought them for $35 million.
Wow.
And
back in like 84,
85. 81 and 85.
Okay.
So he bought the Bulls, keep in mind, in 85, Jordan's first year. They quickly turned the team from one that averaged 6,300 fans per game to one that had an 8,000-person season ticket waiting list.
Wow.
Now, a lot can be said that that happened around the time Michael Jordan was there. A lot of credit could probably be given to...
As soon as Jerry Reinsdorf was there, everyone wanted to come for something.
Oh, man, Reinsdorf. This guy, look what he's doing.
Greatest IRS agent of all time.
Yeah. He took a basketball team that wasn't getting many fans to a team that everyone wanted to see for some odd reason.
Well, maybe it's this not paying Scottie Pippen or breaking up the Bulls that got him the reputation of being such a cheapskate.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when I was looking at it, at one point in like 95, I believe it was, he had the highest paid basketball player in the NBA on his team, Michael Jordan.
He was making like $30 million. It was crazy.
Right. It was sort of like making up for being underpaid his whole career. He also signed the highest paid baseball player of all time at that time.
Frank Thomas?
It was Albert Bell.
Oh, Bell. Yeah.
Signed a $55 million deal.
That's right. And that was Albert Bell's prime right there.
Yeah, it was a decision that the owners agreed to, that it was in turn with the revenue sharing. Anyways, you know, he even won the World Series in 2005.
Yeah.
But with that team, he had the 13th highest payroll in the major leagues of the 30 teams.
Right.
Which is pretty rare to win like that. Yeah, one more baseball fact, and then we'll move on from Reinsdorf. He's from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
As a kid, he was in the stands the day Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier.
Wow. So that's great.
Cool. Yeah. Cool little fact.
That's really fun.
Thanks, Wikipedia. Anyways, let's talk about who plays for the Bulls this year. They got a pretty good lineup to be number 8 in the league.
And now, the starting lineup for your Chicago Bulls!
At point guard, the Cyclops, Derrick Rose.
Derrick Rose contract.
Yeah, he just got hurt again, broke his ocular bone. At least it was a different injury. At least it wasn't his knee.
You come back a little faster with the non-knee injuries.
But, I guess I shouldn't say the good part about this injury, but we might get face-masked Derrick Rose this season. That's always fun to see, like, a bionic player, like Amari Stoudemire had it, or obviously Rip Hamilton wore the mask. Hamilton wore it way past the need of the mask. It just became the way he played.
Phantom of the Opera type game.
So Butler at the shooting guard, and Butler had a pretty amazing year last year. It was his coming out party last year.
Yeah, first time All-Star. He led the league in minutes played.
Fun story about Jimmy Butler. Chris Baker, my youngest brother, attended a country music concert or two with Jimmy Butler a few years ago. They have a mutual friend. Butler just came out during his rookie year, I think it was, when he was riding the bench a lot.
He's from Tomball, Texas.
Yeah.
It's not far from where I grew up.
He came to country music concert with him.
Yeah, apparently he's a big Taylor Swift fan. He gets a lot of shit for that, but doesn't care.
Hey, if you're an all-star and you're leading your team and everything, you can like whoever you want.
The small forward, I'm not sure who's going to start between Mike Dunleavy and Nikola Mirotic. Mirotic also had a pretty amazing first year in the league as a 25-year-old rookie for the Bulls.
Yeah.
But they re-signed Mike Dunleavy to a really friendly contract.
What about Doug McDermott? Are we thinking that he's going to be...
He can't be played less than Tom Thibodeau played him, is my guess.
Right. McDermott played in 36 games last year and averaged only 8 minutes.
Yeah, the power forward, it's another tandem that either player would be starting on most NBA teams, Pau Gasol and the backup Taj Gibson.
Yeah.
Gibson, I think, was a good choice. I mean, a few years ago, the Bulls had to really choose between Omer Asik and Taj Gibson.
Yeah, right.
And Asik had a really good year, then went to the Rockets and played even better. And I was sort of wondering whether they made the right move, but now Gibson seems to be clearly the better player.
Well, if you want to be a good team, you need to have backups who know how to be backups.
I think the player that actually has more to do with whether they're a 60-win team or a 50-win team this year is not even Derrick Rose. It's the health of Joakim Noah.
Right.
he was all NBA 2 years ago. I think he finished fourth in MVP voting 2 years ago. But he was just clearly, you know, to his credit, going out there and hustling and playing through pain. But he just did not look like the same player. And you're not going to beat the Cavs, let alone some of the other good teams coming up in the East, if he is a shell of himself.
I don't want to be that guy who is always like, I tweeted this last year.
Okay.
That guy, but I'm about to.
But you tweeted this last
year. Yeah. I remember him, Noah, obviously we all remember him at Florida, and those Florida teams were great. I loved watching those Florida teams.
Mm-hmm.
But I tweeted this last year.
Okay.
a decade ago, if you told us Joakim Noah would be relevant in 2015, I don't think we would have believed you, but we're all fine with it now. He knows how to be on the court, and he's never in the way. He never mucks anything up. His free throw shooting is completely weird. I don't know how you spin the ball sideways like that. They have their rookie this year is Bobby Portis, which...
He's from Arkansas, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about him except he's tall. He looks like 7 feet tall, 150 pounds.
Bobby Portis is so good that when we did our NBA draft game where we'd try and pick the first round, one guy who played with us picked him to get drafted twice in the first round. That's how good Bobby Portis is that your buddy thought he would get drafted twice.
Was the Suns one of those picks?
You know? No, it wasn't. But
the Suns select Buddy Portis.
Yeah, yeah. Remember, and I think Bobby Portis is so good. Your friend didn't pick the whole first round. He stopped after the second Bobby Portis pick.
Bobby Portis, mic drop.
Yeah, that's how it is. They have good players everywhere. They're 10 deep at least. It's just an injury thing, man. It really is. I guess I'm going to use that excuse.
All right, well, use that excuse when we nail down the numbers. I'm going to let you go first.
Record prediction.
Last year, they had an even 50 wins, 50 and 32.
They're going 55 wins this
55.
Year.
55.
Yeah.
55, that would be 55 and 27.
Yeah.
I've got them with one more.
Ooh.
56. 26. Yeah. So at number eight in the league, 56, we're predicting that this is really going to be a top-heavy season. I mean, the NBA is always top-heavy.
Yeah.
And the haves have a lot more than the have-nots. But I think that's going to be on full display this year with 1 through 8 being title contenders and possibly the last two teams we've previewed, the Hawks and Heat.
Yeah.
But not as likely. Well, let's talk about the man.
What the fuck has anything got to do with LeBron James?
About the man that the Bulls need to be incepted to beat.
It's been a few days since we've talked about him, and I'm really I want to know about him.
Well, with the Bulls, you know, we had Stacey King quotes earlier.
Right.
For the LBJ mention, I would just like to have a brief oral history of the beef between Joakim Noah and LeBron James.
I love it.
A year ago, there was this awesome article on Grantland that I would recommend to anybody, especially if they like Joakim Noah. It gave his backstory, and it totally describes the player that he's become today. You know, the ABCD camp is like this national camp for all the best players in the country when they're in high school.
Is that Adidas now?
Yeah, and it's one of those Nike or Adidas sponsors that couldn't say. But when Noah was in high school, some other guys that were in high school who were playing at the camp, LeBron James, Sebastian Telfair, you know, serious prep standouts. Noah wasn't good enough to play, but he would go there and mop and dry the courts.
Really?
Yeah. He was there every day. You know, he was one of those guys.
He just wanted to be around.
Well, he was one of those guys who was just like showing up 5 a.m. every day and was just like, you know, if you got a place for me to play today, I would play. And they're like, every day? Nope. You're just going to mop and dry the court today.
Wow.
Until, you know, one of these days. It's a great article. I won't try and do it justice, but one of these days he finally gets on the court.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just had to fight for every inch of respect starting early on You know, he's the son of a professional athlete.
Yannick Noah, yeah.
A professional French tennis player. But, you know, so he's always had to prove himself. And I thought that was really interesting to sort of give you the background and the, you know, disdain he's had for LeBron James ever since. Here's a few quotes I found from Noah. Let's see. So this is on LeBron returning to Cleveland, a recent quote, or last summer. I'm happy for LeBron. This is Joakim Noah. Quote, I'm happy for LeBron. He gets to go home. People are happy over there. I really hope we can kick his ass as many times as possible.
That's great.
When they first started beefing was like back in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cavs, when LeBron was originally on the Cavs, they were up by like 20 points on the Bulls with a few minutes to go in the fourth quarter. And LeBron is shooting free throws, or he gets fouled, he's going to shoot free throws. And he just starts like dancing to the music that's going on over the loudspeaker.
Yeah.
And Noah is on the bench, but is yelling at LeBron James, you know, like, stop your fucking dancing.
Wow.
You know, and LeBron actually makes a free throw, walks over to the bench in between free throws, and they're like yelling and cussing at each other. And then after the game, they're asking Noah about it. Noah says, quote, when you're losing the way you're losing, guys just rubbing it in your face and dancing like that, I've lost a lot of respect for LeBron. It's just a frustrating situation. And, you know, just one of the last good quotes from Noah. There's a lot out there, but, you know, he said recently as well, or last season, that Cleveland really sucks in an interview.
Nice.
And then afterwards, you know, he's getting a lot of backlash from the people of Cleveland.
Of course.
Know, surprise.
Right.
And so he has an opportunity to apologize.
Does he apologize?
What do you think, Matt? So what he says instead is... He says, you know, they're asking, do you have any regrets on what you said about Cleveland? And he's just like, no. Why? Do you guys think Cleveland's cool? Because I've never heard someone say, I'm going on vacation to Cleveland.
Amazing.
Anyways, that's a little brief summary of Noah versus LeBron. Let's talk to you, Matt.
And now it's time for a personal anecdote with Matt Baker.
I want to know, Matt, if you've ever had a nemesis or someone you would consider an arch rival.
Starting in fifth grade, I started running club track.
Okay.
It might have been sixth. It was like between fifth and sixth grade.
What did you run?
I was a sprinter, and I did some like long jump and triple jump.
Okay.
But I don't remember how. I love baseball. I was scared of the ball.
Oh, me too.
So that's kind of how that ended, which is a bummer because I think if I continued, I'd have been hitting a whole bunch of dingers, Bob.
Oh, man.
Home runs everywhere.
I feel like you would be motivated to hit them just so you could say you hit a dinger.
Yeah, that's basically what I. And thinking back, it was just, I was scared of like 11-year-old kids. Although 11-year-old kids don't have the best. I got hit a whole bunch. That's why I was get scared of the ball,
because
I got hit by the ball a whole bunch.
Okay, yeah.
I think I was probably scared of it before, though. But I started running club track because I discovered that I was fast. It was one of those things where like I just kept beating.
You mentioned your speed before.
I just kept beating kids. I got into a club track program, which was there was only five of us. It was like a track club of five kids, but we were all good. And we could take on clubs of like 30 or more.
Oh my gosh.
And just it's some of the lower, like the public school stuff. I went to Catholic school, but I joined a public school team. Mm-hmm. We would try and win all the events. We would sign up all of us in different events.
Wow.
So when it came to the club, the actual club, there were a bunch of good kids. So we were Arizona Star Track.
Nice.
Star Track. And there was the Rising Suns, Arizona Rising Suns, and the Arizona Cheetahs. Rising Suns and Cheetahs had a ton of kids, all levels, and the Rising Suns too, and they would have chants. It was really fun because they would chant in the audience, and it was a blast.
And then lose to your five-man team?
Well, so we would compete. I mean, we could take on those teams really well. We would lose on occasion. Like, we wouldn't just win all the time. The Cheetahs and the Rising Suns, more so the Cheetahs, were our rival because we would just go head to head with them all the time. But we were friendly to each other. We didn't like hate each other, you know? one time we looked at the Arizona record for the 4x400 race, like okay. the Arizona record for our age group.
The relay race.
The relay. We looked at it and we're like, man, we can do it. This weekend, we're going to break the state record. Okay.
Nice.
The Cheetahs brought in a ringer, a kid who moved away. They brought him back. We both broke the record and they beat us by like a couple seconds.
Just calling your name the Cheetahs.
I mean,
I understand they're fast for track, but it's so close to cheaters.
Yeah, right. So that was so frustrating because I didn't like running the 400.
Yeah.
But we would
Sprinters
do it.
Usually don't.
Yeah, because it's like all the way around and you have to try hard. And
yeah, you got to sustain that energy.
Yeah, but we made the decision that we were going to break this record, and we did. It's just the team brought in a ringer and broke it also a few seconds ahead of us.
Man.
It was so frustrating.
So is this ringer your nemesis?
Just the track club, I guess, in general.
The Cheetahs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were
they stripped of their place in the history books?
No, I think they they had their place.
You just write ER over AH in the history books?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's a good one.
On the next episode of Brick House.
Number 7 on the breakdown. This is home to some of the country's best barbecue.
Ooh.
Which probably made it especially hard for their best player to lose 20 pounds on a mostly vegetarian diet. But he did it.
Yeah.
We'll find out who that is, who he plays for on the next episode of Brick House.